Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the success of professional women is much in the news right now with Sheryl Sandberg's book Lean In generating so much talk. Now comes a book for another group of Americans underrepresented at the top rungs of financial success. It's called The Wealth Choice, Success Secrets of Black Millionaires. The author is consultant and motivational speaker Dennis Kimbrough, who joins us now from Atlanta. Mr. Kimbrough, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian. I'm honored to be on your show.
You did a 7-year survey of 1,000 wealthy African Americans, famous ones like Spike Lee, Herman Cain, and Steve Harvey, and non-famous ones who were just rich. What were you looking to find out?
Well, I used a full-blown survey, as you said, and I just wanted to find out the behaviors and mental mindsets of African-American millionaires, the financial elite. And like I said, there are about 35,000 black millionaires in the United States. If you rewind the videotape and go back to 1955, Black History Month this is, Martin Luther King, when he led the Montgomery bus boycott, Brian, there were only 5 black millionaires in the United States. And I was fortunate enough to interview 3 of the 5, and I shared their story in my first book, Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice. Now, today, with 34.5 million African Americans, there are about 35,000, which still is nothing to shout about. That equates to 0.1%.
So, as David Dinkins said on the show last hour, we may not be where we want to get to, but at least we're not where we've been, right?
Exactly. And what I found over the course of the 7-year empirical research, and why do I use the term empirical? Because number one, I used a full-blown survey. I asked 118 questions. And that survey was completed anonymously. Number two, I had 6 focus groups around the country. I had 1 in North Carolina, 3 in Atlanta, 1 in Washington, D.C., when there were no less than 100 black millionaires in that room. I had a small one in Nebraska and even a smaller one out in Vegas with black women. And then last but not least, I had more than 60 face-to-face interviews, and that's where I interviewed Steve Harvey, Tyrese, Damon John of Shark Tank, L.A. Reid of X Factor, and 3 of Black America's 5 billionaires. And what I found out the DNA to wealth. I found 7 best practices that these men and women subscribe or incorporate in their daily routine. And that's why the subtitle are featuring the 7 laws of wealth.
And we'll get to some of those. Just want to clarify that your definition of millionaire in this book is someone who has accumulated $1 million of net worth, excluding their home. So it's $1 million of savings, basically. It's not people who make $1 million a year, which is how the term is used a lot in politics now when they debate a millionaire's tax, right?
Exactly. I use the same definition that the Federal Reserve uses. It's assets minus liabilities minus primary residence. And you're exactly right, because if that weren't the case, then folks out in California and Vegas and parts of Arizona would be millionaires simply because of their residence. And there's another way to look at it, too. I had 2 ways to go with this, and I chose the Federal Reserve. It's good enough for the Fed. It's good enough for me. But when you look at the Economic Policy Institute, they say there are about 112,000 African-American households with a net worth of $1 million or more. And I wasn't looking at households. I was looking for individuals.
So the average age of the millionaires you surveyed was 52, with an average net worth of $4 million. The average income of their parents, and this really jumped out at me from your stats, the average income of their parents was just $10,000 to $20,000 a year. That's below the poverty line for most people.
And what that equates to, I'm glad you brought up, that makes them self-made men and women. Those individuals who have won most in life, Brian, have relied mostly on themselves. When you look at the individuals who I interviewed and the hundreds upon hundreds in the focus groups, at one point in their life, they could have been categorized as poor. I had a great interview with Victor McFarlane, and your listeners may not know who Victor McFarlane is, but he's the founder of McFarlane Investments and Real Estate. He's a real estate developer out in San Francisco. When President Obama went out to the West Coast, he dined with McFarlane at his home. And here's a guy with a $600 million business, and he was on par to be a billionaire, but he couldn't hold it because of the last recession. Now, I have his bio, and I'm asking him questions that haven't been asked before. And I said, Victor, well, you were born and raised in Middletown, Ohio, which is a blue-collar working-class family, and you're the product of a single-parent female household. And that household, that home, that condo that his mother, that he lived in the foyer area was a couch. And he told me that the first 12 years of his life, that couch substituted as the bed that he and his older sister slept on. And when he shared that with me, he saw where I was going. I said, man, Victor, that had to be tough. That had to be. He said, listen, Doc, no empathy, no sympathy for me. Those were probably the best 12 years of my life. And I said, what do you mean? He said, it was during those 12 years that I made a conscious decision that poverty would have no place in my life. These individuals, which is the second law, sooner or later, you've got to decide. At the counter of success, there are no bargains, Brian, but you must pay the price in advance and in full.
And that's your second law of how to become rich. The second law of wealth, as you call it, is resolve now that you will not be poor. But I want to ask you about that in slightly different context. One of the critiques of Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, which has been so much in the news for her career advice to women who want to make it to the top, is that it has been so much about individual advice. She advises women about things like how to smile and how to sit at meetings, which the critics say put the burden on the victims, so to speak, for having to do things differently for men rather than to address the double standards and the inequities. Do you put too much here on the individual when you should or could also be looking at the structural inequities that make it harder for African Americans to rise to the top?
Well, that's where the leadership is going to be. It's going to be at the individual level. People are asking right now, where's our leaders? Who's going to make it better for us? I mean, who are we going to rally behind? And that's not going to happen. I mean, we're talking the final rung on the ladder to civil rights. I mean, that's where Martin Luther King was going at the time of his death back in the 60s. He was leaning towards civil rights versus civil rights. And that's where it's going. We're not going to have any leaders anymore because capitalism, and let me get this straight right now, capitalism is not a dirty word. Brian, all capitalism means is that everything is for sale. You take the word capitalism, write it on a piece of paper, C-A-P-I-T-A-L-I-S-M. Take the Latin derivative of the word capitalism, C-A-P-U-T. But what does it mean in Latin? It means head. What's the one thing you must use in order to survive in a free and open society? So we don't live in a society that's not divided between rich versus poor or black versus white, liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, male versus female. No. We do live in a society that's divided between dreamer versus non-dreamer. And people will get in trouble in life not because they wanted too much. You're going to get in trouble a lot because you settled for too little. And the bottom line, it starts with you. I love the title, The Wealth Choice. There are 50 million different choices that we can make on a daily basis. Which way we're going to drive to work, which shirt I'm going to wear. Am I going to wear a tie? Am I going to wear business casual? You don't have to make any of those choices. But, Brian, the bottom line is there are two choices that you've got to address day in and day out. Number one, you can accept the circumstances as they are. Or number two, you can take the responsibility to change them. And all the individuals in the wealth choice took the latter approach. Yeah. Am I saying that this country is equal? Am I saying there's no such thing as discrimination? Am I saying there's no such thing as racism? Hell no. I mean, racism, discrimination is like rain. If it isn't falling, it's off somewhere gathering. But you cannot control that. The only thing that you can control is your mindset and your behaviors.
Dennis Kimbrough is my guest, author of The Wealth Choice, Success Secrets of Black Millionaires, including his survey of thousands of black millionaires. Let me get to a couple of more survey results that I found really interesting. One of them was about housing versus cars. The appraised value of the homes of the millionaires in your survey was under $300,000. And you know that's very modest by today's standards. But your millionaires own an average of four cars, including commonly a Mercedes or a Lexus, you say. So what does that say something about how black millionaires prefer to spend their money and prefer not to?
Well, I mean, the bottom line, they are very particular what goes through the hand, and they love to pay cash. Why? Because cash hurts. When I also asked in the survey, define wealth, define money, and they said freedom and security, and that's their modus operandi. So, yes, here's a home, less than $300,000, and you're a part of the financial elite. What is that telling you? Number one, that's telling you that they subscribe to middle-class values. Number two, that tells you there's no beating on the chest. There's no look at me. One of the things I didn't share with with you, but it's in the book that I excluded athletes and entertainers. Now, I had athletes who asked to complete a survey, but I said, no, I'm after wealth. I'm not after income. And in terms of the cars, yes, they own about four cars. And if one is not a Mercedes, one will be a Lexus, but the other two are domestic models. You know, I just dropped my, I'll never forget this story, two stories, anecdotes I got to share with you. About a year ago, I dropped my dog off at the vet, and I picked my dog up. We came back in town, me and my wife, after a trip. And when I picked it up, there was a guy who I know was a part of the financial elite, and I'm asking him to complete a survey. He says, sure, I'd love to do it, and I give him a survey. He was picking up his dog from the same veterinarian, and Brian, this guy had the absolute oldest Hyundai pickup truck in the world.
Yeah.
And he owns 12 businesses at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. And
what does it tell you?
Yeah, and so, I mean, the bottom line is wealth is not what you have. Wealth is what you look forward to. Wealth is not what's in your pocket. Wealth is what you have left, and that's the bottom line. If you cannot save 10 to 15%, and that's where the focus is, if you cannot save 10 to 15% of everything that you earn, the seeds of greatness are in you.
Let me ask you one more thing. Most of your advice is the classic kind of advice, the kinds of things you were just talking about now with respect to savings and resolving not to be poor, the classic kind of advice that motivators give to people who want to make it. I read The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Exactly.
Once
mm-hmm.
upon a time, you have The Seven Laws of Wealth, and they are classic. Believe in yourself is one. Find your unique gifts. Do things you're passionate about. Look to serve the public, not make them serve you. Covey and Seven Habits had something very similar. Is any of this different because you're writing for a black readership, or is it the same classic advice, but your readers just happen to be black?
Well, I mean, all of the above. Yes, there is some overlap, and I mean, Covey said it all, I mean, years ago, back in the 1980s. But the bottom line is, until you apply, there's only one thing better than knowledge, and that is apply knowledge. So what if you're hearing it over again? It's not going to make a hill of beans until you incorporate it in your life. I mean, Brian, look at all the information in a free and open society, and I'm not saying this is the best country in the world when it comes to all the different genders and colors and ethnic groups, but when you look at the data, 27% of African Americans spend more on a weekly basis than what they bring in. 30% of black America have no savings plan at all. More than 35% of black children are raised in poverty. More than 40% of black Americans, they don't even use a bank for their financial transactions. And here in the most open and the most opportunity-driven society in the world. But what is it going to take? Number one, you got to subscribe to the first law, which is knowledge. Pick up the book. Read the book. The bottom line, we live in a society that is predicated upon the fact if you want to earn more, I suggest that you learn more. And unless you're going to pay attention and subscribe to the first law, the other six won't do you any good. To answer your second question, yes, we need to profile our wealth creators. Why is that critically important? Because you become what you see. I mean, I can go home and I can cut the TV on and I can channel surf, and I might see Bill Gates of Microsoft. I might see Warren Buffett. I might see an old interview with Steve Jobs. I mean, Brian, I'm asking you, as a white gentleman, how many times have you cut on the TV and you've seen a black wealth creator profiled? And then you wonder why all these kids go into sports and entertainment? I mean, now is the time to make the change. The wealth choice, black America, it may not be your best choice, but it's one of your few choices, and this is the time to change.
Consultant and author and motivational speaker, Dennis Kimbrough, his new book is The Wealth Choice, Success Secrets of Black Millionaires. Thank you very much for coming on with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Take care. God bless.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, insects for dinner. How about horse meat stew? Where do you draw the line on what other cultures eat? Stay with us.